Hi, and welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. Welcome back or welcome to? I don't know. But you know we're available on all your major podcast platforms, but also you'll find us on our dedicated YouTube channel. Please dig into that, subscribe, because we have about 50 to 60 hours of back catalogue footage already edited and ready to go. Don't want you to miss it. So the leadership enigma, we are really now starting to focus on the human being as opposed to just the human doing. And a lot of people think that I have an eclectic background or what might be described as a squiggly career. So I wanted to talk to someone who's also got a squiggly career in order to try and find out what motivates, what inspires her, and what decisions has she made which has navigated her to her current position, because yes, she's also a partner at Heidrick and Struggles. So this will be fun. Come back to me just after this break, where I'll be talking to the wonderful Caroline Pill. I'll see you in a moment.
You're listening to The Leadership Enigma, powered by Transform Performance International, a podcast for the insatiably curious to explore the power of human-centered leadership to create real momentum for positive and sustainable change. Whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, or corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts, and disruptors as we discover that success leaves clues. Now, here's your host, Adam Pacifico.
It's a huge welcome to the Leadership Enigma. How are you, Caroline?
I am well. How are you?
It's a bit bizarre, isn't it, as you listen to that introduction and here in the studio?
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. So I've got to ask still, because this is all still very new to us, what do you think of the new studio?
I think it looks fantastic. I feel very honored to be here. It feels very professional. And yeah,
it's great. A bit of a change from the office for us, isn't it?
Slightly, yes.
Now, I did a little bit of an intro. Well, I did no intro whatsoever. So, Caroline, just tell the listeners and the watchers now, who is Caroline?
Well, Caroline could be Caroline. That's probably how...
So have I pronounced it wrong?
No, you can pronounce it any way you would like. I am Belgian. I have lived and worked in quite a few places, New York, Shanghai, Amsterdam, Brussels, and London for the last 15 years. Started off as a lawyer, moved into search, then became a coach, both personal and life coach, career coach as well, and, you know, moved around quite a bit professionally.
And you're a personal trainer as well, I think I saw somewhere.
In my very little free time, yes.
So with so many of these, let me go backwards to go forwards. So born in Antwerp, what was that like growing up in Antwerp?
Very small community. I'm Jewish, grew up very protected, loving family, small community, yes. Felt very safe growing up. By 18, I was like, get me out of here.
Spread the wings.
Yeah, I wanted to see the world. So moved to the big city, which was Brussels at the time, studied law, discovered different cultures, different ways of thinking. It was hugely eye-opening for me at that time. After that, I felt I needed more. Moved to the U.S. for a master's. Went to Yale Law School because I was committed to becoming a professor. And, you know, long story from there on, but that was my early childhood.
So I want to try and work out the decision-making process, because I think this is a lot of this is about squiggly careers. Whenever I give a little bit of a CV for myself, people say, well, how did that happen? And why have you done that? And how does that even make any sense?
Yours is much more exciting than mine, I will say.
Well, that's very kind of you. But it's maybe equally as baffling to some, eclectic to many. But maybe there is some form of order out of the chaos. I don't know. So let me take you back to Antwerp, as you say, growing up in a small, safe, lovely environment. But by about 18, you felt as if you needed to spread your wings. Tell me what was going on then. Was it in relation to working in a small or living in a small community, or was it in relation to the options that you felt you did or didn't have at that time? Do you remember what was going on when you were 18?
That's a really good question. I haven't thought about that in a long time. I just was very curious, always have been, mostly around people, not so much around places. So by 18, I just needed to see other mentalities, cultures, languages maybe. And I felt compelled to try to see something else. Most of my contemporaries actually never left either Antwerp or Belgium. And to me, that just was never something I even thought would happen to me.
Now, that resonates because we were just speaking earlier that my daughter came in and did a podcast only last week. She's 19 years old, but she's a traveler. She's almost, I describe her as a hippie. She's quite bohemian and she's now gone back to Thailand. And in some ways, she feels invigorated and inspired by that culture and that way of life. So talk to me about the family side of things. I had lawyers in the family, so maybe that was one of the reasons why I went on to do law, but I think I was doing it automatically without really thinking for myself. What was being suggested for you that you should think about or consider doing, and how did you work that with that?
I grew up in a very in an environment where you were expected to do well. That was kind of from a very young
high
age,
achieving.
Very high achieving. Okay. My mother, who was a physio in an old people's home, had very, very big ambitions for her daughters. My whole family, obviously, post-war, came from nothing. Immigrants. My dad is Israeli, moved to Belgium when he was 10. Right. Holocaust survivors, all of it, the parents of them. So we grew up with a very clear understanding that unless we were going to make something ourselves, well, there wasn't much more to give. So that's something that was ingrained very early on. Now, my sister was much more, my little sister, much more creative. I was a good student and the eldest, and, you know, I was expected to do certain things. I think my mother would disagree with that, but that's how at least I felt growing up. And when I turned 15, 16, starting to think about what I wanted to be, it was very strongly suggested, as it is in most small communities, albeit Indian or, you know, I've heard this so many times. It was, you can be a doctor, you can be a banker, you can be a lawyer. Hate blood, not that good with numbers, so lawyer it was.
Right.
I think I had like a very short, like, dream where I was like, oh, I could be a jewelry designer, or I could be an actress, or I actually want to be a psychologist, more on that later. And to all three, my mom said, these could be great hobbies and let's just study law and we'll talk about the rest later. So I did.
Do you think there's a change in just, you know, where we're coming from an age perspective, that maybe our parents and even grandparents had more limited options and now we've got huge options, 100%. And our kids or extended families, friends, their kids, huge options. You know, they're going to do jobs that we don't even know what they are yet. You know, especially when we talk about AI and
GPT. We're going to be replaced very soon.
Hopefully not just yet. Okay, I hope not. But do you think at that point that you felt that you were being given limited options? And if we talk about squiggly careers and non-linear paths, what do you think was driving you in relation to there's something bigger, there's something better, there's something different, and I've got to go and find it, and I've actually got to get on a plane and find it? What do you think was driving that?
Again, it wasn't necessarily linked to places. It was more linked to curiosity and people. And I have always been a student in general, but of other leaders or people I admired. So my decision making was always linked to certain people I admired or I felt were my mentors. So when I studied law, I really loved law. It's actually funny because I didn't enjoy being a lawyer. However, I loved studying
law. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I felt very compelled by the logic, the analytics, the learning part, and the delivery of that. So for many years, I thought I would not only become the greatest lawyer in the world, but also a professor, which drove me to then study in the U.S. Yale Law School was renowned to being the best law school in the world, la la la. So those decisions were very much ambition-driven decisions, but without really knowing where it would lead me. I didn't have one big master plan.
So there was the curiosity when you were fueling it. So what happened in between? Because, you know, we're both recovering lawyers now, aren't we? So you loved the study of it. I'm not sure I did. I'm trying to think back. But then you didn't like the practice of it. So what happened there? What was the disconnect?
I chose the wrong field. Okay. I went into M&A. Yeah. And as I said, I love people. And being stuck in rooms, doing due diligence, writing contracts, whilst I intellectually appreciated the efforts that went in, what I was craving was the interpersonal and the negotiations. And as in everything, when you're a youngster, that's not
the
what
people
you have.
Side of things.
Yeah, didn't have access to that as much as I would have wanted. My personal life brought me to move countries quite a few times, which made me lose momentum on the lawyer career side.
Right.
And me being me, if I'm not the best at something, I quit, which is probably not the best thing, and I'm much better now. But at the time, I was like, it's going to take me so long to get to where I want to be that I don't know this is really my path.
You said something I want to pick up on, because this really resonates with me. You said you lost momentum. And sometimes I had that feeling, because I did a job, you know, with the police for 6 years, or as a barrister for 4 years, and something else for 2 years and 3 years. And in many ways, it felt a little bit flighty. And someone described me as a butterfly, because you'll flit and then you'll do something else. Or even when you see something shiny, you run off.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, I found that to be problematic. Growing up, where I thought, why is it I can't stick at anything? Did you feel it was problematic, or did you feel that it was actually part and parcel of the journey that you were on, and you would get to the right destination? Because I didn't at the time. It's only as I got older and wiser, maybe, that I started to accept it more. But I think I struggled.
I think in my 20s, definitely what drove me was love.
Right.
I won't lie. That was the most important thing. I felt at the time, and I was wrong, but I felt there's time for a career, this time. Yeah. I've got good studies. I'll figure it out. My love life brought me to different places. And quite quickly, especially as I moved to China, I spent 5 years in Shanghai as a corporate lawyer who had just very nice degrees, but no working experience nor language skills.
Yeah.
So I had to study Chinese. Like, I just did all the right things, but realized a little too late that it's not that easy to just start fresh somewhere where you just have no either connections or cultural understanding, etc.
I mean, it's incredible. You've lived in, I think, in 5 countries. Mm. You speak 5 languages. Mm. What was China like? Because that is culturally such a different place from Antwerp, and then you were in, you know, the east coast of the US. What was that like for, you know, a youngster still at the start of a career to suddenly be immersed in a culture where you didn't speak the language, you didn't really know anyone? As you say, you moved for love.
Oh yeah.
How does that work?
I still am, I think, quite a risk taker. I didn't really think it would be a problem, if I'm very honest. I announced to my parents after having Yale and then New York Bar and then working in New York in one of the most prestigious law firms. And then, sorry, mom and dad, I met someone who has a trading business in China. I'm just going to move there. And
how did that go down?
Surprisingly well. Okay. Interestingly, my mom, who's my everything, has always been extremely supportive in everything. So she thought, well, yeah, you know, she's smart, my daughter, she'll figure it out. It was quite hard when I got to China. I can't say that it was the best time of my life. It was 5 years between 2004, 2008,
right,
where China was not what it is today. Like, people, very different. I thrive on open conversations and humor and debate and movies and all the things that were not at that time something that was very openly accepted.
Yes.
So I found that difficult. I found it difficult not to be able to go to the bookshop or you know, a coffee shop and have a casual conversation, because my language skills and the way I looked made me automatically a foreigner.
Right.
I had never felt like a foreigner, not even in New York, but I very much felt like a foreigner, Lao Wai, as they say in Chinese, over there.
So tell me how that feels, because I remember one experience in Rwanda where I felt very much...
In Rwanda. You just need to show off now, right?
Well, no.
I'm but like, China, let me trump China.
Well, no, what's it like? Because that was... I mentioned that because I just remember that was the most acute experience of feeling like a foreigner.
Yeah.
And I was, of course. Tell me what that felt like for you, feeling that way and thinking, hang on, is this now questioning or undermining the decisions that I've made? How did you reconcile that? Or did you still see this as a great curious challenge?
So you might have been described as a butterfly, which I've been described as well, but mostly as a chameleon. I am extremely good at adapting quickly. That's kind of probably one of my superpowers, if I may describe it as such. However, I think I was pretending a lot during that time. I wasn't aware of who I was going to be, maybe. Yeah. And I just went with the flow. I was in China. I learned Chinese. I started a job. I lived my life. I wasn't happy because none of these things felt like me fundamentally.
Right.
But I just got on with it. You know, if you come into a place where there's a lot of challenges, my natural instinct is to overcome the challenges without actually thinking, well, hold on, is that actually what I want? So I didn't have that mindset back then.
So what's your biggest takeaway now from the experience that you had in China, do you think? So for people listening or watching this, especially young, amazing talent coming through, and we've got so much of it, you know, at Heidrick, what would be your advice to them now in relation to the decisions they make in their 20s and taking on opportunities where they're not really sure what the outcome will be?
I think exactly that. Your 20s are for exploring. Don't take things too seriously. Nothing is set in stone during that time. It's a great time to just figure out who you are, both professionally and personally. There is no rush. I don't know why for a long time I always felt a rush to achieve, to settle down, to do this, to do that. And I didn't take the time to really question myself. Okay. What do you actually want? I was just living off other people's expectations, even though I don't think they were setting them on me. But that's kind of how I lived my life.
How do you feel about time now? Do you feel that time is running out or that you have plenty of time? Because I always wonder that as we get older. Sometimes I feel time is running out in relation to the decisions that I might make or not make. How do you feel about time?
I'm quite relaxed about time. Life has taught me so much and I've gone through so much that I'm happy to be able to slow down a bit when it comes to what's next. Okay. I'm kind of much more relaxed that opportunities present themselves when they're meant to, as opposed to chasing them.
Right.
And things happen for the right reason at the right time. I think younger me was just always kind of trying to catch something. And when that was done, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? It was quite exhausting.
So full of that, quite exhausted. Full of the energy and the curiosity.
Yeah.
So after China, where did you end up?
So after China, I was sent on a secondment to Amsterdam. It was in the middle of the financial crisis.
Right.
And they were like, I was with Allen & Overy, one of the big law firms. Yes. And they had this Belgian woman in China who didn't really speak the language.
Right.
Nor could negotiate contracts. They were like, maybe that's not the ideal place for her. So they sent me to Amsterdam for a secondment for 6 months, after which I was interestingly made redundant to then be rehired 6 months later in the Brussels office of the same company.
Okay.
So very unsettling 1-2 years where for the first time I kind of thought, okay, I literally don't know where I'm going. I don't know what's going on. Felt a bit, disconnected maybe. And a lot of stuff was going on in my personal life as well. And I think when I then moved to London, and again, for personal reasons, I ended up in London, I took a good look at myself and thought, you know what? I'm just not a happy lawyer.
Now, I kind of want to come back to the couple of years where you said things weren't going to plan, and that happens for all of us. That's called life, right? Where it just doesn't go to plan. Challenges get in the way. Again, what do you take from that experience where it felt wrong or it felt bumpy or it felt there was no plan to it? You know, as you look back, you know, again, thinking about the young talent that we've got, we have the chance to work with, what would you say to them now in relation to when it is starting to go bumpy or wrong or awry?
I guess you never know what's around the corner. All these things that happened to me or whilst I was there felt tough at the time, but I wouldn't be where I am now had they not happened. Had I had a normal law career, I probably would be a partner in one of the big firms, but having never really discovered my true passion,
right,
which is why I now encourage the younger generation to fail and fail often and don't be afraid of that. And there's always going to be something else. You just need to be open to it. And I think when I think back during those years, yes, I was scared, but deep down, I still had that little flame that told me that
right,
something would come out of it.
And that's why I wanted to talk to you really about squiggly careers, mm-hmm, because there's no linear path. And you and I both may have set off in one direction and then strangely landed in the same place, but by a very circuitous route. The pandemic, one, you know, we still have to talk about the pandemic, but it was, well, how was it for you? Because obviously, I think you did more study or you did some certain things in order to try and mitigate the pandemic. Tell us a little bit about that.
Pandemic. That was a very interesting time of my life. It feels like forever ago. It feels like yesterday, right?
Yeah.
I think for all of us,
we lost track of time.
Yeah, we're just never going to forget how we felt, like very much a body experience as to being at home, time with ourselves, scared, having no answers, no one had answers, very unsettling for everyone.
Where were you during the pandemic? Were you in London?
I was in London.
Yep.
I was going through a divorce,
right,
which had started before the pandemic. My timing in life is just wonderful. So that was in chaos. My career, I was working for a boutique search firm at the time as
right,
a partner,
yep,
where literally if I didn't bring in work, well, no one was going to. And I didn't have a salary, so everything was kind of commission-based.
Right.
And which suited me great.
So that's real eat what you kill.
Yeah, and I quite enjoyed that because the challenge of it excites me. However, for the first time in my life, I can say honestly, I was worried. I was worried about money. I was worried about career. I was worried about my love. I was worried about everything.
Okay.
And I was deeply unsettled. So what do I do when I'm deeply unsettled? I study. I love studying. Studying is my go-to,
okay,
which is something that reassures me. Okay. So I thought, okay, well, if search is dead forever, because I'm also quite extreme in my thoughts. So if I never work again in this field, what else could I be doing? And I had done a personal training course during one of my gardening leaves, and I was like, that's something I enjoy. I'm too old to really go into that. But what I really also enjoy is coaching and mentoring. So I did a short course with an American coaching institution, and I thought that gave me a taste for it, but it wasn't enough. And I then took a serious course with the Henley Business School.
Yep.
And for 6 months, remote, that gave me very much a community, felt really good. And during that time, work started picking up, etc. And life went back in the new normal,
okay,
in our Zoom normal life. And yeah, I was very happy to hold on to that during the pandemic.
So would you describe yourself as quite impetuous?
You have to translate that word for me.
So do you think almost that you have an idea and you just go for it?
Yes.
Without much thought, you think, that's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it.
Absolutely. I've never done a business plan in my life. I've never thought things through. I don't really ask people. I mean, I'll ask them what they think, but if I want to do it, I'll do it.
Okay. Where is that coming from?
Apparently since I was a little girl.
It's always been there.
I've been told, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let me shuttle forward to the role that you have at the moment, because you're obviously a partner at Heidrick. And just tell everyone what your focus is now.
So I lead the global practice for fashion, luxury, and beauty. Now, when we go back 15 years, when I started my career in
yes,
search, I started with another big firm in London where I had never done search. Coming from a legal background, I was supposed to do legal recruitment. Fluke, it didn't happen. I was put in a consumer department. And about 1 or 2 years in, I was like, oh my God, fashion, luxury, that's what I want to do. So shared my hopes and dreams internally. And they looked at me and they were like, you're very sweet. That is not a business. And if it is a business, it's not out of London. It's out of Paris or New York or Milan. Like, nice try, but no. After which I said, okay, great. Well, if you won't let me do it, I'll do it myself. I joined a first New York-based firm for 3 years. I then became a partner in another one for 6 years. And out of London, global, set up my team there and started working on the assignments that I wanted. And then Heidrick came knocking and suddenly it was a field that people were interested in.
And the rest is history.
Yeah. And that's kind of been, for the last year or so at Heidrick.
Now, you talked about how you're very people-oriented. That's what gives you energy. Tell people what it is you do within that space, within the luxury space. You know, what is it you're actually doing? Because you're actually finding people for people, essentially.
Correct.
So just to help people understand a little bit more about that, why does that drive you? Why does that give you the energy that it gives you? I see you, you know, most days in your office. So where, you know, what's giving you that energy?
Oh, it's a mix. And this is where everything kind of comes together always. I'm sure you feel the same way. My legal background has taught me to be very analytical, solution-oriented, detail-focused, and obsessed with results. That comes in very handy in search. So what do I love? I love winning a client or a search. I love then understanding the brief, what needs to be done, then working in a very process-oriented way in order to get there, and then changing someone's life, because we sometimes forget at the end of the day, our job is to change people's lives because their career is a big part of that and gives me so much joy and fulfillment.
Now, nearly all of the people, all of the organizations we work with have customers, and we are customers of many organizations. Talk to me about customers within luxury. What is on your mind when you're thinking about putting people into an organization that is supplying the luxury market? Is there something in your mind that you're looking for the right type of person or the right type of way of working within that environment? Is it different in some way? I don't know, because I've not really spent any time, a little bit of time in that sector, but not a lot. So,
Yes and no. Every client is different. Every search is different. At the end of the day, it's about obviously finding people with the right skills, but that's what we all do. But the cultural fit, probably more than in other sectors, is something that I focus on quite a lot. It's not enough to find someone who can do the job.
Okay.
In the sectors that I cover, it's all about the fit and the way they view their market and what they can do with it and making sure that there's an alignment there, which is not that easy.
Do you think that comes from your experiences of having lived in 5 countries?
I hope it contributes. I think it allows me to not think that my point of view is the only point of view. My frame of reference is not always the right one. I learned that, and that's where China has been very helpful. When I started to learn Chinese, I realized there's Mandarin. There's no alphabet. I was like, how does that work? There is no alphabet. The grammar is extremely simple. It's all about the characters and how you bring them together. And every word can have 4 meanings depending on the way you pronounce it.
Right.
When I realized that, I realized that I knew nothing. And that was extremely refreshing at a very young age to be like, wow, the way I think is just such a small fraction of so many other ways of thinking. And that has never left me. So when I think about culture fit or candidates or even clients, I try to put myself completely out of the equation and think about, okay, how does that work? And it's hard to explain because it's not a thing, but that's kind of how I think about it.
In some ways, it's you taking all of the experiences that you've been through and just trying to use that in relation to the work that, that you do now. Mm. So what's next for you?
Am I getting fired from Hydra?
As if. Well, that would be a first, wouldn't it, James? I think you might fire me. You know, maybe they'll see this and we'll both.
I know.
And we'll do something.
We'll figure it out. I'm sure we'll do something.
Yeah. But no, what's next for you? Because, again, a lot of younger talent will see people who are now in partnership roles and think, oh, you've achieved what you've wanted to achieve. But that's never the case, because we're always work in progress. We're always learning. You have a passion for learning. So Heidrick provides us with huge opportunity. We both know that. But what's next for you?
Being settled for a while, very honestly. I think, you know, going back to corporate was a big challenge for me. This was not something that was straightforward. I had to think about it long and hard, because whilst part of me had that itch to kind of scratch because I had unfinished business with it, another part of me thought, well, am I going to be accepted for who I am, or do I need to play a role again? To my great satisfaction, I've been able to be myself in this company. And I think, you know, my job, beyond my job, would be to help the younger generation realize that you can be all the things you want to be. You don't need to sacrifice who you are or your values or the way you present yourself in order to get there. And if I could help at least one person understand that, that would be very important to me.
So it's very much staying true to who you are and people working out who they are over time. Let's think about the young talent in our office, because that is replicated in organizations up and down the country and beyond. What would be the best piece of advice that you'd want to give the amazing young talent we have in the business? And we've had four of them sat here where we had, the future voices come on, and they were brilliant. They really were. They were incredibly eloquent as regards what they need from leaders and from culture and what it is that they hoped and aspired for themselves. But you're a partner in the business, so you will be looked at and asked for advice. What do you think would be the best piece of advice that you'd want to give the young talent who are the future of the business?
Absolutely. And I think about this all the time. And I'm going to be controversial here, and the youngers might not like this answer. I think the value of hard work has kind of been something that is less on the table than other topics. And yes, of course, mental health, of course, purpose, of course, values, of course, all the big picture things. But in order to get to a place where you have a voice, a true voice, and you can help people both financially but also culturally, etc., you do need to get to the right place. And in order to get to the right place, in my mind, there are no shortcuts. It is hard work. It takes resilience. It takes, you know, time. It takes understanding the steps. You might not like them, but there are rules. And unless you are willing to be a maverick and figure it out by yourself, I think we both kind of got to the right place, but in a very different way. If that's not something you're willing to do, or you have that in you, then it's going to be part of the journey to really sometimes do things that you don't love or that. And I feel like in today's world, there's more to your point, like what are leaders expected to provide? But what's the reverse of that? How do the next generation help leaders get them to allow the new generation to flourish?
So
I think there's a collaboration there. Yeah.
So it's not just on one party. It's actually that there's a marriage of effort there.
Yeah.
What I'm hearing from you is it's hard work.
It is hard work.
And let's be honest, we've both had to work hard in relation to what we've done. Everyone has, but it's always nice if you can work hard and really enjoy.
I just feel that a lot of younger, and I was the same, you looked at a partner and you were like, oh my God, that's so amazing. I want to be a partner.
Yeah.
And people forget how hard it is to actually get there.
And it's been the sacrifice.
It is, because, you know, you're not always, clients are difficult. Like, there's just a lot of challenges along the way. And if you know where you want to go, then just go for it. And if you don't, then figure it out. There's no one way to get there.
What do you think has been, this might be an unfair question, what do you think has been the biggest aha moment for you in your life, when it really kind of in some ways made you stop, take stock and think, okay, wow. Was there something that's a bit of a standout for you?
Oh, God. Many things. Yeah, I think when I joined the firm before this one,
yep.
And I'll name him because I adore him and I owe him a lot. His name is Kirk Palmer, and I joined him as a partner, having not proven myself on anything. He took a chance on me,
okay.
And he believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. Like, I knew I was good at what I did, but I didn't think I had it in me to create a client base and to be really seen as that thought leader.
Yeah.
And he gave me a chance, and it did change my life.
What made him make that decision? Do you know?
You should ask him.
Okay.
He believed in me. I don't know. And it took a year to get anything going, and he stuck by me, and he gave me the confidence to keep pushing.
And in some ways, is that a bit of a lesson for us as well, is to really look at the younger talent, to trust and empower,
yeah.
And allow them and as you say, trust them to do what they can do, and just see how far they can take
Give
things.
Them the tools and have patience, because results don't come. Hopefully they do for some people, but like, they don't come immediately. And they come when you least expect it. I was ready to give up when I got my first real break, and then it never stopped after that. But you never know when that's going to come.
I mean, you and I are still relatively new to the organization. So in some ways, that's good advice, isn't it? They don't come overnight. I mean, maybe there's a little bit of luck sprinkled in there as well, but it's going to take time and hard work.
If you go on my website of the coaching, I don't really believe in luck. I believe in planting so many seeds that it feels like luck, but it's not luck.
Down to hard work again.
Yeah.
So you said coaching website. What's the URL? What's the address for that?
I can't tell you. It looks terrible. I need to refresh it. I refuse.
There's that luxury in you. You're saying it's not ready.
No, it's not
for
good enough.
Okay.
But I think what I say is, the harder we work, the luckier we get.
Okay.
And I very much believe in that.
Have you enjoyed having this conversation?
Not at all.
Excellent. Good. I'm going to ask you some short fire questions now. So you just have to pick one of them. All right. You ready, Caroline? So this is everything you need to know about Caroline in just a few questions. So, going out or staying in?
Staying in.
Okay. Texting or calling?
Texting.
Train or plane?
Plane, but I like trains.
Okay, there's that traveler in you. Mm. So live forever or be remembered?
Neither.
What's the alternative?
Be happy.
Okay, we can put that in there. Well, actually, you'll like this one. Be loved or feared?
Be loved.
Okay. Bagels or toast?
Bagels.
Remote work or face-to-face?
Both.
Oh, okay. Even after the lockdown experience. That's interesting. How about see the future or change the past?
Live in the present.
Oh, you see, you're giving me alternatives.
I'm sorry.
Sports or music?
Oh, that's a tough one. They're both good for the soul.
Okay. And my last one is live in the same place or travel the world.
Mm.
Yeah, I think we know the answer to that one, don't we?
Yeah.
There's the obvious one.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, it's been amazing to have you
just
come and chat. And I hope this is useful for people in relation to squiggly careers, in relation to just having that courage to be who you are, find it out, explore, be curious, and in some ways go with the flow.
Mm. Absolutely.
You have enjoyed yourself, really, haven't you?
Yeah.
That was such a loaded leading question, wasn't it, really? Brilliant. Thanks so much
for
coming in. Take
care. Thank
you.
Join us again next week for more tips and strategies on the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with your host on LinkedIn or visit the dedicated website, www.leadersenigma.com, powered by Transform Performance International, where you can access our exclusive learning, including books, videos, bonus content, assessments, and more. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.